A very disturbing statistic, Australia. We have one of the highest rates in the world of parental abductions. This is, of course, when a parent takes a child out of our country, overseas, and sometimes the children are never seen again. But it's actually an epidemic right around the world. But there are people who go and recover these children. There's a group called the Child Abduction Recovery International Group. And I've got the founder of that company, ex-Australian military and UK police officer, Adam Whittington, on the line from Stockholm in Sweden. Adam, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Mate, first things first, start at the beginning. What has usually happened when a parent comes to you for help?
In 95% of the cases we deal with, it's usually after the client has battled through the courts for, on average, 2 to 3 years. And usually they get the ruling in their favour that the children must be returned under the Hague Convention. That's when we get involved, because once that ruling has been made, nobody enforces these rulings. So there's many hurdles in this topic, but the main problem with the Hague Convention is if a child gets ordered to be returned, nobody does anything about it, and that's where we come in.
So you guys are completely sanctioned in your actions, Adam. You have the full force of the law behind you, the convention behind you. So you can go and recover these children, correct?
That's right. As long as the client has the correct court papers, which is basically an order that the children must be returned under the Hague, the client, we never pick up the children. It's always the client. So for legal reasons, we don't touch the children. It's the clients who have the backing by the court, and we are usually signed over as a power of attorney. So we do actually have rights as well to collect the children.
So do the parents travel with you, or the parent, do they travel with you if you need to, you know, go to another country to find these children and then and take them back?
We do things in two stages. We always go firstly, obviously the main thing is usually to try and find the children. So we never have our clients then. So we do the research, we do the surveillance. Once we have found the children, which sometimes can be a long time, obviously these abductors do everything in their power to avoid the authorities. We then, once we have the children located, we put our plans into place, and then we call our clients to come for the recovery. So we'll have everything pre-planned ready, whether that's with the authorities or not, and the client will always be with us to collect their children.
I know it must be difficult to kind of give it an average, Adam, but roughly how long would it take you to find the location of a child and get yourself into a position where then you can recover it safely?
Well, it really all depends. Every case is unique in its own right. And it's funny to say, but the longer these things go on, the longer the abductors are on the run, usually they settle down and they start to try and live life normally because they know the authorities are not going to come after them. That is good for us because it's an opportunity. They've let down their guards. They've stopped running and hiding. So the longer the case goes on, it's usually the easier to find them.
And what sort of circumstance do you find them in? They're just like in normal living circumstances where the children are going to schools. They've, you know, kind of, I suppose, taken up a normal existence again?
No, this is the whole concept. This is where the general public do not realise. They think it's another parent who's taken the child, so they must be well, safe, healthy. It's absolutely not true. And in 99% of our jobs we do, these children do not go to school. They do not go to hospitals if they're sick, medical, because the authorities can be traced through those records. So these children in particular are living for no choice of their own, like fugitives. And honestly, the conditions we've found some children are disgusting. And people would be shocked to see the type of conditions we recover children from. It's horrible.
Is it kind of living like in third world conditions, or is it child abuse?
It's, you know, there's all different forms of child abuse, and straight up taking
neglect.
Your child, it's complete neglect. It's complete abuse. Child abduction is nothing but abuse. Child abuse. The children don't have no choice. And many of these children, if they're not infants, they know exactly what's going on. These children have been locked up in apartments in many, many countries. They're not going outside to play with other kids in the street. They're isolated. And these are, you know, well, they're all different ages, but you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 year olds living like fugitives. And I could give you numerous of cases that are like that.
So essentially, too, you know, you're not just recovering them, are you, Adam? You're actually saving them. I mean, potentially from, you know, a terrible end. I mean, if they've been neglected to a point where the health is an issue, then these children are at great risk.
Absolutely, and this is what the general public don't understand, and this is what the governments, you know, the governments do absolutely nothing to help these parents or children.
Why?
A lot of governments just see it, they see it as a family issue, you know. They don't want to get involved in international
affairs,
laws,
yeah.
Because there's two countries get involved. You know, as an example, the UK FCO are just pathetic. We've had meetings in their office, and they just refuse to budge on anything to assist these children. And their main excuse is, well, we can't get involved because it's on international soil, which we understand. There's a lot of technicalities in international law. Mm. But there's a lot more these governments and embassies should be doing, and they can do.
So some do
assist.
Adam, who do you collaborate with on the ground? I mean, is it local police forces? I mean, if you're a former police officer yourself, then obviously you know how to speak, as it were. Do you get much feedback or much help from local authorities or governments?
Yeah, we really do. You know, we work closely with many embassies. Different nationalities seem to help more than others. And why that is, I don't know. But once we have the legal papers, you really need to be on the ground, and you need to be going to the police commissioner in the local area and say, listen, this is what we've got. Your courts have ordered this child to be returned for this reason, blah, blah, blah. We always get cooperation when we're on the ground with authorities, whether it's police, immigration. But if you're on the telephone and asking for help or sending emails, you'll never get a response. So you really need to be, and this is why we do all the footwork. We get out there. Once we have the legal backing, we make these authorities through our connections as well. We have a very big network of people around the world in different positions that help. So,
how risky are these missions to yourself and I suppose to the child that you're trying to recover as well?
You know, our number one priority is the child's safety. Now, if we do planning and everything and we're ready to go and there's for whatever a technicality or a safety issue, we will not do the recovery. We'll pull back. And you've seen that in the ITV documentary the UK put out recently. Mm-hmm. We abort an abduction, a recovery after the abductor had been hiding for 2 or 3 years from the Polish authorities, and the only way the father could ever get his child. And this is another thing too. The court orders 99% of the time the judges give the parents, the left behind parent, power to take the child by force if necessary, because they're well aware that to go up to the abductor once we find them and hand them the papers and say, you know, this is the court order, can you please hand the child? But they will not do it. So,
Adam, do you need to arm yourself in these situations? I mean, to protect yourself potentially from a very hostile father or family, do you ever need to carry any kind of protection?
No, we don't. I mean, once there's a couple of times where we found out information, very reliable information, that the abductor was armed. So we prepare ourselves, but we never carry weapons and all that. As an example, we go into, we've done a couple of jobs in Iraq. So we will get, through our contacts, being ex-military, we have close protection groups that we have worked with. So we would hire a close protection group to protect us and the child.
Yes.
So we don't carry weapons. We avoid all that sort of stuff.
Yep. So have you actually been in danger then, Adam, when you've been doing one of those recoveries? I mean, you're talking about going to some pretty hostile territories. Now, obviously, fathers are going to be very reluctant about somebody who's not armed coming into their home to take away their child.
Yeah. Firstly, we never go into people's houses. We respect the laws within those countries. Now, we never, ever will go into a house or a dwelling and take a child. We wait for the opportunities for them to be in the public, which is legal. As soon as you start going into people's premises, private premises, you're breaking the law.
Okay.
You have break and enter charges and all this sort of stuff. So we avoid all that. And these are the things we need to control our clients with sometimes, because some of our clients, in particular the male clients, once we find the children, they just want to go in and get them. So we have to, part of our job, which is a big part, is to control our clients. So, as far as the abductors, the male abductors, you know, we're working on one case right now, and it's no secret, but he's part of, it's an Egyptian job, and he's part of the Muslim Brotherhood. So his reason to take the child away from his home country was to train him to be a Brotherhood Islamic...
Fundamentalist,
whatever you want to call them. So this little boy now, we've just found him. He's being schooled in a private Brotherhood school. So these are the things we also have to take into consideration. Now, we're working side by side with the Egyptian anti-terrorism police on this job because we know where they are. They want him. We want the child. So quite often we do cases like that with the authorities where we do joint operations.
So it's collaborative. Have you ever found yourself in prison as a result of your endeavours to recover a child?
Yeah. One incident last year, I think it was 2014. Unfortunately, you know, we deal with very desperate parents and very vulnerable parents as well. And this is another topic as well. A lot of parents get taken advantage of by other so-called recovery people who are nothing but cowboys and amateurs. And, you know, in 2014, unfortunately, the client did not tell us all the information. And we understand they sometimes hide things from us because they're so desperate, they just want us to help them. But in this particular case, the client didn't tell us that she was wanted by Singapore immigration officers three times for entering illegally before we even got involved. So her story to us was she needed us to get her into Singapore without landing at the airports or immigration because her ex-husband had made false allegations to the police there in Singapore, and if she entered Singapore, she'd be arrested.
Yeah.
So we took that story, and before we do any jobs, we always check with as much as we can with the authorities to confirm our clients' details and stuff. But unfortunately, the Singapores, being Singaporeans, refused to do anything, refused to help. So we had to take the mother's story. And we knew it was a bit fishy, but the child was in bad condition where he's living. So we decided to take the job on, and we decided to go in via yacht, via Malaysia, and we landed at a yacht club in Singapore, and we didn't wait for immigration to stamp our passports in for obviously the mother's story to us. So that's the only time we've sort of ended up in jail, so to speak.
Can I ask you, Adam, if a parent needs to recover a child, let's just use Egypt as an example. What is kind of like the average cost, as it were, for a parent to recover a child? If you have to take a team there, travel there?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. Every case is different, and we base our fees on location, how hostile the country is, how many children are involved. So there's no set fee.
Yeah, I understand that. I was just trying to get an idea. It's obviously, because parents, I'm just thinking, obviously, Adam, you know, as a father, you know, it's a blank check situation. You wouldn't care how much money you had to pay to recover your child.
But we also had to consider, you know, 99% of our clients come to us who are not rich.
Yes.
And we understand that. And as an example, the Australian father we just helped from Thailand, you know, he was ripped off by somebody else, took $10,000 off him, did nothing. So they come to us, some of them come to us bankrupt because they've spent so much money on legal fees for 2 or 3 years for lawyers in both countries and got them nowhere except, you know, remortgage their houses. They do a lot of things. So as an example, the Thailand job we did, return the Australian girl, was $12,000.
See,
as an example.
Mate, you know, here's the thing. Not for a second, after speaking to you today, have I thought for even a nanosecond that, you know, you're doing this to fleece people. You know, it's just not the sort of line of work that I can imagine you doing.
No.
But obviously there are people out there, there's charlatans and people who are extorting money from people who are in a vulnerable position. But to hear that that costs $12,000 to recover a child is surprisingly cheap. If you just said to me right now that that was $50,000, I would still think that was cheap.
Absolutely. But this is what we many of our clients do come to us, and it's happening more and more now after they've been scammed.
Yeah.
And we have to take that into consideration. You know, we are one of the only reputable companies doing this in the world, and there's not many. But obviously, you know, I've seen it in the police. You get vulnerable parents in any situation, you're going to get scammers come out, and this is what happens. And these parents will do anything, as you say, to get these children back. And if somebody's promised them, we can get your child back, they're going to pay anything.
Mate, I've got to say, I think the people who prey on vulnerable parents like that are as bad as the people who abduct the children illegally. Look, if anybody's listening now and they do have a child abduction issue and they would like to speak to Adam, you can go to Child Abduction Recovery International, Google them, find their website, get in contact with these guys. Adam, thank you so much for your time, mate. Really fascinating. And I just think it's really heartwarming for Australians to know that there are Australians like you and other people out there who are prepared to do what our governments are not going to do, what other people are not prepared to fulfil their agreements to do, and that is to make sure that children are living in the best possible circumstances in their country of their birth.
No problems at all. I appreciate your time. And I mean, this is the whole problem with this topic. There's not enough awareness.
Clearly.
People don't realise what's going on, and they don't know where to turn to get help because the governments refuse to help these parents. So it's a pleasure. It's the best job in the world for us, and we love helping these children out.
No doubt, mate. You're a good man. Good on you. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.